Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the April 6th edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee, now joins us as usual in this first weekend of the month of April. John, thanks so much for taking the time. Always our producers here want to know what you've done with your planting season and the kinds of changes you might have made in the last month. How are things progressing?
Well, let's see. We finished planting corn. My corn acreage went up from 850 last year to 2,800 this year. Cotton acreage went from 2,500 to zero. Bean acreage went up. And it might interest you, in last week when beans got so high in price and corn was down, I switched to 400 acres of corn to beans.
That's what they always want to know, what your switch was and when you made it. So last week?
Well, it was a last-minute deal because it figured about $125 an acre more profitable doing it that way. And I would have switched more, but I had atrazine down in one of my farms, so I couldn't do anything. But we're hearing a lot of switching around at the last minute, some switching around the last minute, but most of the deltas from here south is probably mostly planted. And so the amount of switching that went on, I don't know if it was that great, but it was certainly going on. I started hearing of it about 2 weeks ago in South Arkansas. They were stopping corn planting altogether and switching to beans.
Why zero for your cotton acres?
Why zero?
Mm-hmm.
$200 an acre less profitable. That's pretty easy.
Right.
Really easy. Plus, we got pigweed problems, and atrazine does real well on pigweed that we can't do it with cotton.
Can't do it with cotton, and you've got pigweed that's resistant to glyphosate. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. It's awful. Just awful.
And then you have Palmer amaranth, I assume, too.
Yeah, we've got lots of problems. I hope y'all don't get what we've got. It's a mess.
Well, the Palmer's coming our way, and we do have resistance in some places to weeds. And I take it it's become a real problem for you, and the only thing you can really do is atrazine at the moment? Is that right?
Right. Or last year we chopped cotton with choppers first time in probably 15 years for 3 months solid. And that's the only other way I know to get rid of it is chop it out.
You mean you by hand when you say choppers?
Hand.
Right. So,
yeah.
So you hired actual crews to come in and
right.
chop the weeds out. Wow.
Yeah.
And how many? That is something else. That's a terrible weed problem to have to deal with.
Well, it's real, and it gets worse every year.
All right, let's go through some of the rest of the commodities. Can we start with USDA's grain stocks report and mm-hmm. what you thought of it?
it's an interesting, well, I've been on the subject of grain stocks, but never made any sense back in September that you couldn't have 2% more production and 9% less usage. That was last year. And I guess you could argue that this report somewhat vindicated the idea that they've underestimated feed consumption. So I would guess that would be my take on it. But there's also the school of thought going around that the on-farm stocks of corn are equal to a year ago, yet the basis is horrendously high. So you could make the argument that there's more to come.
More to come, more fun in terms of there's more corn out there than no, than you expected, or less corn?
More feeding, less corn. In other words, maybe this is sort of the start of losing all the corn they found.
Oh, so the on-stocks are actually going into feed usage.
Yeah, like last year's feed usage in corn is down like 300 million bushels with 2% more animals fed. Never made any sense. And so this report was somewhat less than expected, so maybe it's the start of finding the losing all the found corn. And certainly the basis tells you it isn't there. How could the basis be this strong? So I would guess that maybe that they've underestimated feed usage 150 million bushels, something like that.
Then we'll know that in June?
Yeah, it'll be an evolving story. Another story is it could be worse than that because the ethanol numbers have been using 2.7 million gallons per bushel, and that might be 2.8, which would make less corn usage for methanol than expected, and that might back into the idea that they've overestimated ethanol usage but underestimated feed usage.
Do you think USDA will tell us if they surely they will
change
the way they calculate that number?
Oh, yeah, they will if they ever do it. Yeah,
right.
I would think. There's a lot of rumors that they will. But I still think there are problems with the corn stocks, and I still think corn stocks are lower than popularly thought.
Have any estimates for the April 10 WASDE numbers?
It's such a low carryover. How can they get it much lower? But it does look like the ethanol production is coming down a lot, so I don't expect they'll change the ethanol number. The stocks and all positions report and says you've got to raise feed consumption, lower the carryover. So I'd say 100 million lower, just knowing them. But we're just such a low carryover. How can it go any lower?
Right. So here's my next question then. You put in how many? 800 extra acres of corn? Is that right?
No. I put in 2,000 acres extra.
You put in 2,000 extra acres.
I went from 800 to 2,800.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I have the wrong number. Okay,
well, I would have gone another 400, and I switched the last 400.
Right. So you've dramatically increased your corn acreage, despite the fact that there appears to be a wall of corn, relatively speaking, if we're at 95.9 million acres for new crop. So either you have priced it, or you believe that the price of corn will remain strong in the coming year, given what could be a very large incoming supply.
Well, I had sold 100% of my production at 660 in September futures, so I was way ahead on the futures.
And you can carry that going through the process. Do you take crop insurance in your part of the world?
No, basically not, because it's too expensive and they've got our yields too low. But I did take it on wheat this year for some crazy reason or other, but I didn't take it on beans or corn. But basically, it's very expensive, and you have to have a complete failure to get anything out of it, so it's not a very good deal.
And it probably got more expensive this year than it had in the previous years for you. Is that right?
Right. It doesn't work for us.
Well, you're far enough on the fringe, I suppose, that...
You're right.
Yeah.
It
just doesn't work for you. Okay. Yeah. So when you start to look at old and new crop pricing then over the next 4 months, what are your expectations?
Well, I think the corn acreage is going to fall off some, maybe 1 million or 2 million acres, and that'll go to beans. So that's not as bearish on corn. And also, I'm intrigued with this E15 stuff. Looks like they've granted E15 waivers to about 20 companies, and somehow, some way, with ethanol $1 a gallon under gasoline, people are going to find a way to use it. So I wouldn't be surprised if ethanol usage, because of the E15, isn't 500 million bushels or more greater than current estimates for next year, for this coming year, 12-13. So that would be an offset. And if the acreage is lower on corn, I think corn's fairly priced, and you get down to what is China buy. So If you hadn't already priced corn, I'm not so sure it's a great place to do it right now. We're going to have crop scares. We always do with some variety. So I don't know. I'm sort of neutral on the corn. Beans look real interesting. If you hadn't sold beans, I think you got to sell a lot of them here.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? That would be opposite of what many are thinking, although the price of beans is very high.
Well, that's where the price is high, and, you know, we're beginning to get acreage estimates for the Southern Hemisphere this year, and I saw one crop estimate yesterday for the total bean crop next year of 279 million tons, which is one heck of a lot higher than 245 this year. So beans, if I were a farmer, and I am a farmer, I would be real big hedged. I'm about 80-some-odd percent hedged beans and about 50% hedged next year's beans at sort of current levels. So I don't know. I think there's real downside risk in beans. You're going to have a lot of crop scares and all that, but if we have a 275, 280 world crop up 30 or so million tons, the market's going to go down and maybe go down violently.
Can I bring you back to ethanol for just a second? Because there's some awfully interesting things that might happen there. For instance, do you suppose there's much of a prospect, even without E15, that ethanol production in the United States might remain high and export to South America, importing sugar cane produced ethanol as an advanced biofuel, although I'm not sure where it would be used, but it would be possible to make that switch? And does that have an impact on the way you think about ethanol, or have you thought much about how this product is moving around the planet?
Well, it's cheap. It's cheap as it can be on gasoline here in the U.S. It's a dollar under. It's really quite cheap. And then other side of the coin is that U.S. and world gasoline consumption has got nowhere to go but down because of efficiency of cars. You know, Toyota came out with a hybrid in January that gets 87 miles to the gallon. So basically what I see in the U.S. in particular is that we're recycling a 10 or 11-year-old fleet into a new fleet that's going to get about 20% more miles per gallon, and the population is more or less stagnant. So I think as far as ethanol in the United States goes, we're looking at as far up as we're going, unless we go to from E10 to E15, then we got that switch, which could be dramatic.
Is that necessary to do, given global consumption of oil stocks?
I don't know. It's a good question. You can get a lot of debates on that. I still think basically oil consumption is headed down because of natural gas, gas to liquids, all sorts of things are going against crude oil consumption. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this.
Across the planet, you mean, or just in the United States?
Well, across the planet. You know, I think basically all cars are getting more efficient. And if we ever start really going to hybrids, it'll get a lot more efficient. I think what hybrid sales are not very, very big in the U.S., but they're growing. My assistant was in Italy last week, and she was riding around Fiat Panda, gets 67 miles to the gallon. That's amazing. 67 miles a gallon. Well, eventually they're going to get over here with clean diesels and everything else, and we're going to get off of our SUV kicks and get into something a lot more efficient, and that's not good for overall gasoline consumption in the U.S., and with it goes whatever percentage ethanol has.
Right. So or would you bet on clean diesel, natural gas, what kind of, or the electric hybrids using gasoline?
I would bet against the electric hybrids, but I would bet for just the standard hybrids. And I think we're coming to, for instance, the 18-wheeler fleet, Navistar, came out in conjunction with T. Boone Pickens, that's come out with a clean, a natural gas engine that will sell at the same price as 18-wheeler big diesels, and supposedly costs about a third less to operate. Well, you're going to see a slow conversion of our 18-wheeler fleet from diesel to natural gas.
But only if we have the distribution system.
Well, I think we will. I mean, it's the same argument we had 5 years ago about ethanol. We don't have the distribution system. It'll find its way somehow.
Right. Well, that's an interesting thought, that it would come in the long-haul big engine fleet. It might be, I suppose, easier to put that into the distribution system because there are fewer places that those rigs fill up. And oftentimes they're on the home base, too, not on the road.
Interstate systems. And all the cities are now going over to, like here in Memphis, we have a lot of natural gas buses, and some of the pickup trucks are now converting to natural gas. So I think over time, it's not good for consumption of crude oil, any way you look at it.
You're listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Back in a moment with more from John Bondurant.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. After the warmest March on record, the pattern continued into early April. This week started with temperatures almost 15 degrees above normal. However, by the end of the week, temperatures had cooled off and were closer to normal, with some reports of even freezing temperatures in parts of central and northern Illinois. Rainfall was below normal this week, north of Interstate 72. Amounts ranged from just 2 to 4 tenths of an inch in those areas. Meanwhile, southern Illinois saw rainfall totals between 5 tenths of an inch and an inch. The 4-inch soil temperatures ranged from the low to mid 50s in northern Illinois to the upper 50s and low 60s in central Illinois and the mid to upper 60s in southern Illinois. On Saturday, highs are expected to be in the mid-60s throughout the state, with winds out of the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Lows Saturday night are expected to be in the low 40s to the north and in the upper 40s in southern Illinois. It's more of the same on Sunday, with highs in the 60s and lows Sunday night in the low 40s. Will be a little cooler next week, with highs in the 50s through Wednesday. Lows are expected to be in the mid to upper 30s in central and southern Illinois. However, northern Illinois is expected to have lows at or below the freezing mark. No significant rain is expected until late next week. I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the April 6th edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Now we'll continue our conversation with John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. Turn your attention to China for me.
Nice one. Thank you.
we'll just make a transition. Well, it's part of the global it's part of the global oil consumption calculation, but you know I want to talk about corn and soybeans and exports to China and the size of their crops. Their growing season is the same as ours, roughly. I think it's off by about a month, but it's pretty close.
Right.
What do you see in the coming year from them?
Well, you've got all these stories that they've overestimated last year's corn crop, and I sort of believe the stories. I mean, gosh knows, corn's at $10 a bushel right now in China. They've got lots of subsidies and tariffs and keep it out. On the other hand, their yield per acre, I'm sure, is like every place else. Technology is going to up yields. They're in the, what, high 80s or something like that on corn. So I would think over time the yields are going to go up. But I don't know what to make of China. I mean, the population is basically stagnant. Actually, it's slightly negative. And so you're not growing population. You're growing from the poor to the middle class that eat more more meat, which requires more grain. But then on the other hand, there's stories now coming out that they're getting more efficient on their usage of going to enclosed hog operations, commercial, which use corn more efficiently than mom and pop in the backyard. So you could actually have a loss in corn consumption because of that, that's offset some by the population shift to meat. So it's a very confusing picture to me. I don't know how you feel about it, but I don't know exactly what I think of it.
Well, it's an interesting conundrum to look at, because you're right, the population is very large, but the growth there is in the size of the middle class and not the size of the population so much.
Right. And the population's actually going backwards.
Right. And you have an interesting dichotomy between that nation and India, which has a population not quite as large, but pretty
growing
close.
Growing rapidly.
But growing rapidly. And they differ greatly in the way they consume. And it's sort of fun to watch. And then I think about those two and then mature democracies, I suppose, but let's say mature marketplaces, for instance, Europe, which has a population that only grows in the EU when they bring in a new nation, but by no other means, and they're very mature, and they've suffered some real problems economically in the last 3 or 4 months that probably have a great deal to do, or last year, that have a great deal to do with having a population that is all middle class, or like the United States, fairly wealthy, but begin to consume less over time. Much like you're pointing to, I suppose, with the global, with ethanol and gasoline in the United States, because we get more efficient at it and there aren't as many of us, and it's all a unique puzzle place.
It is. I mean, I think by last count, there's 79 countries in the world that are in negative population growth. That would be all of Europe, Japan, China. A lot of countries going backwards. It's a very interesting puzzle.
Well, it's an interesting puzzle to try to put together, because we haven't really been in this place, at least not recently that we can think of. Although there are spaces you can look at. For instance, if you were to look at the former Soviet republics, Ukraine in particular has a population that has been declining for some time, and declining fairly rapidly. And if you ask them, that one is related not to economics, at least not to begin with, but related to Chernobyl. And the female population simply there decided that they were unwilling to risk any adverse effects to their children in the womb.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, no, I was told that directly by a teenager who had certainly been told by her mother that's the way the case. And I had been there, and she simply asked, this was in 2004, I believe, she simply asked, did you notice there are no children? And this was from a 20-year-old, and I was in a city of 300,000 at that point, and I hadn't made note of that, and then I started counting, and I went to Kiev, and I was in Kiev for 5 days, and I over that period, I think I was in Ukraine for 10 days. I saw 10 children.
Good Lord, Don, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's really unique to think about how our planet is evolving, and what that population is, and where it is, and what the maturity of the population and the marketplace, and how much wealth they happen to have, and how goods and services, in particular, food stocks and energy stocks of all sorts. So if you just think of food as energy, how energy stocks of all kinds move around the planet, and it'll be fun to think about it and what happens in the coming 20 years. But last October, we passed 7 billion people on the planet, and our growth rate you know, we're still moving up, but I think we're beginning to slow down.
Yeah.
So we might, you know, where does equilibrium come?
And as we get older, we eat less, too.
Well, I haven't yet. but maybe I will. Maybe I will. Oh, so, John, it's just a ball to think about how things will happen over the long term. But in the short run, it's about, for the producer on the farm, it's about trying to take advantage of the economics of what's out in front of them over the next 12 to 18 months.
Oh, yeah, and we got these tremendously volatile markets, and I still believe as a farmer that better than 50% of farming profitability is in hedging and not in being a good farmer. I really believe that.
How do you take advantage of it?
I mean, you just, when the prices are high, if you're a good hedger, you're going to do well. If you're a good farmer and a bad hedger, you're not going to do well.
And do you want to be a true hedger, meaning meaning
absolutely.
What you've done now is you've got a corn crop hedged, right?
Right.
At 660, and you're going to hold it all the way to fruition, all the way to expiration.
Yeah, I've already sold a whole bunch of basis corn also. So, yeah, I've hedged a lot of 13 stuff. These are very profitable prices, so why wouldn't you? If we want to gamble, we can speculate on our own account. But, I mean, farming, we've got very, very profitable opportunities here, really profitable. So how many times I've been farming since 1986, I've never seen profitability anywhere near this, anytime.
How do you, John, deal with the bank, the margin call, and the risk that comes with a short crop?
You just have to have a good relationship with your bank, and you got to also realize that you may have hedges on and have a short crop, and it's not a guarantee that the market's going up. It can go down, too. Now, you may have a short crop in your area, and the world has an abundant crop. So that fear is a big fear to farmers, but it can work both ways. I remember one year I was a big hedger in corn at 320 as of years ago, and we had aflatoxin and had a horrible crop, and I pulled the hedges at 185. Made more money on the hedges than did farming. So that, to me, I mean, I'm just trying to emphasize that if you have a bad crop, it doesn't necessarily mean the market's going up.
Right. What's your best piece of advice for a farmer in the Midwest this year?
Hedge soybeans. have a big load of it sold. At this price, you got to do well.
But if you hedge it, you've got to plant it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it appears that from all the budgets I've seen, the beans are more profitable than corn right now at these current levels. I've got friends in Indiana that claim that 170 bushel corn and 55 bushel beans means beans are $200 an acre more profitable. If that's true, I can't imagine why you plant corn.
John, thanks so much.
Oh, it's always good talking to you, Todd.
Oh, good to talk to you.
Have a good day.
Hey, you too. Thanks so much.
Mm.
Thanks, John. John Bondurant is with Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. Joins us here on this April 6th edition of Commodity Week. Please do find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a great and safe start to the growing season. I'm Todd Gleason.